Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
The College Baseball Experience on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Bird Dog Shorts. Dominate the summer with an amazing pair of shorts and a free Yeti-style tumbler when you order over at birddogs.com/pool. That's birddogs.com/pool. All righty. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the College Baseball Experience. I'm your host, Noah Bienick, aka 77, and I'm coming at you live 11:50 p.m. Eastern Time, and I'm joined by a special guest today, now batting on the College Baseball Experience, Action Network's Doug Ziefel. Sorry, I didn't double check with you on the last name and pronunciation before. I like to do that. I'm sorry. I apologize. But is it Ziefel? Yeah.
No, you nailed it. And you know what? Honestly, most people don't. So I give you a lot of credit. Thank you, Noah, and thank you for having me. I'm excited to be back on again.
Awesome, awesome. So Doug, he's been writing College Baseball Picks articles this season with Action, and he was on the show last year during the College World Series with me. So I think a major storyline from last year's College World Series going into this year's College World Series is that there's plenty of talent in this year's College World Series. But last year, the first 10 games were decided by four or more runs. The winning team won the game by four or more runs. This year, we've seen six games played so far, and five of them were one-run victories. And shout out to friend of the show, Matt Grissom, for tallying up these trends and sending them to me. The opening number on unders are 6-0. Florida versus Virginia pushed the closing line under, so technically you still didn't lose. But the dogs are 5-1 covering the run line, and favorites are 4-2 in these games. Doug, what's your takeaway from this tournament so far this year?
Well, I mean, the close games, really, it comes down to pitching, and the pitching in this field has been stellar from really all aspects. You know, you're looking at the top guys. Paul Skeens came out and dominated on the biggest stage that he has thus far. But then you look at other guys like on TCU, Cole Klecker, and they had their number two guy step up big time today. You know, it's just been an all-around effort from a lot of these teams, and it's been starting pitching, and then other teams have found key guys in the bullpen who have kind of shown up on the big stage, and it's helped keep them around ball games. And that's why a lot of those run lines are closing in late. You know, Oral Roberts was +3.5, and they were down 4 for a majority of the game tonight. You know, to get to cash in a lot of tickets for people.
Yeah, we talked about it pre-show. It's like there's a ton of talent in this year's starting pitching crop, but then the bullpens are really making it entertaining. And, you know, the baseball fan, the everyday baseball fan, not the diehard college baseball fans, the ones that are tuning in just for the College World Series, they get it all, man. They get a pitcher's duel early, and then they get an offensive affair late when some of the pitching is, you know, a little bit iffy. And I mean, late game dramatics all the way around today. Before we get into those, I have one more question that I want to ask you. I ask every guest that comes onto the show. That way, I mean, it's a fun topic to discuss, and the listeners are able to pick up kind of where your fandom or rooting interest lies. I mean, you've been covering college baseball for quite some time this season. Are there any futures that you currently hold in this field of seven now, as Virginia just got dumped today by TCU?
Yes, that is an unfortunate dumping there for Virginia here. You know, they were one of the teams that I was very high on. If anybody read my work heading into the field of 64, the two teams that I was highest on were Virginia and Tennessee. And now that Virginia is gone, my allegiances are with the Vols moving forward, as, you know, they have all the pieces that you need to make a run.
They do.
And compared to last year's team, while it is not as talented, they still have the pitching depth, and the pressure is off. They are not the number one seed. They don't have these lofty expectations. That's all on Wake, and we kind of saw that get to them maybe in game one there. But the Vols, they're built to bounce back, and we'll see if Dolander can lead them tomorrow.
Yeah, I was also pretty high on Virginia. They're the one team that I was like, my favorite – it was my favorite value play. I thought you were getting a quality team at a great number. They had a tough regional, but I viewed it as a doable super. And then if they got there, their side of the bracket was the weaker side, in my opinion. That's kind of how it worked out. However, when I was tweeting it today, 0 for 14 in two games from Jake Geloff and Kyle Teal, that's just not going to play. When those two guys were carrying the burden of – you know, kind of this offense. I mean, Geloff was their big bopper with a lot of home runs. Teal, he was their RBI machine, bringing a lot of guys in. When you're missing that 3-4 hitter in the middle of the order, quite literally, because they went 0 for 14 with just two walks, three strikeouts, it's tough to win. And that was a hard way to go out when both guys have been so pivotal to this team's success over the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's definitely a testament to it because, you know, you can see as they go, the whole team goes. Yeah. And obviously the way they lost to Florida was crushing, you know, literally and figuratively with the balls flying out of the ballpark. Yes. And also emotionally. But, I mean, they had the clear opportunity to bounce back today. Conley Early, he was not at his best, but he kept them in the game. Yeah. And they just could not cash in. And when a lot of it was Geloff and Teal in the middle of those spots, you know, they were able to their one run early came on a Geloff RBI ground out, but yeah, that's obviously not what you're looking for from Jake Geloff.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I have a bit of Tennessee, however, that's not where a ton of my money's sitting right now. I grabbed Tennessee because I felt a little bit more confident in them over LSU and Stanford to just get to the bracket final. Just questioning both of the other two teams' pitching depth. And I think that you covered it perfectly. I think they have the pieces that you need to make a deep run. However, I do have a preseason on Wake, and then Florida and TCU still on the other side at 100-1. Virginia, unfortunately, just got bounced. But I think it's going to be an interesting set of games this side of the bracket that we're going to talk about and pick today. Definitely the more marquee side with a lot of the better matchups. Any which way you size up these two teams or these four teams, it's going to be a great matchup, and we've got two more here today. But before we get into recapping Sunday's action, I need to tell you about Bird Dogs, because one, they make you look good and they make you feel good. They are stretchy khaki shorts material designed to fit slimmer through the thigh and leg, giving you a truly sculpted look. Bird Dog shorts do the exact same thing as Lululemon, but they fit much better. They fit way better than regular shorts that are made of stiff, restricting cotton fabric. And these Bird Dogs shorts fix the issue by inventing cloud knit fabric that looks just like khaki, but stretches so you get a way slimmer fit without having to sacrifice movement. Bird Dogs uses an anti-stink, sweat-wicking fabric that keeps you cool and dry all day long. I've always said it on this show when we've picked up Bird Dogs, I'm an avid golfer and I'm still young. There's a lot of grad parties going on during the summer. You can go play a round of golf. And if it runs long, you got a 4-hour outing. and you need to just show your face at the grad party, these are perfect because they're not going to smell if you just go straight from golf to the grad party with your clubs still in the back of the trunk. So go to birddogs.com/pool and enter promo code POOL, POOL, for a free Yeti-style tumbler with your order. That's birddogs.com/pool for a free Yeti-style tumbler. You won't want to take your Bird Dogs off, we promise you. So the first game of the day, we kind of touched on it a little bit. TCU defeats Virginia 4-3. The big one for me here is TCU in game one against Oral Roberts didn't really get the timely hitting that they did here in game two against Virginia. That first game against ORU, they were 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position today. They took a little bit better advantage of that, however, only scoring 4 runs still. Not that really, really hot offense that we saw coming into Omaha. And Sam Stoutenborough, he retired 12 hitters in a row at the beginning of the game, kind of stymieing Virginia's momentum because they had runners on in the first inning trying to make some noise. And then really the bats kind of fell asleep for the next 4-5 innings for the Hoos. You talked about it a little bit, Doug, but was there anything else that you wanted to add on this game and just what you saw from maybe the TCU side of things? We talked about Geloff and Teal and early pitching for UVA, but anything else?
Well, yeah, I mean, TCU's victory really has to be a credit to their bullpen. And honestly, I think we've underrated them a little bit coming into the College World Series here. You know, there's plenty of solid arms beginning to prove it. You know, while I'm someone who does buy into some of these metrics that we have finally available around, you know, college baseball here, there's a couple of arms there that have solid ERAs, and they're showing it in this small field here. And, you know, they have the ability to get outs against some of the best bats in the country, and they did it today. So, you know, from Stoutenborough and everyone on back, it's really a credit to them to shut down this Virginia offense. I mean, 5 hits against the team that led the nation in batting, led the nation in batting average. Yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah. And you touched on it. That bullpen has been impressive, and maybe I overlooked them a little bit too. Because that was the one big question that I had. I still had a future on them because I saw how hot they were getting in the month of May. But Ben Abel, he gave up the 2 runs in the Indiana State series. And I was like, you know what? He might not, you know, I don't know if he's going to have it in the big, when he gets to the show, when he gets to Omaha with the big lights. But I mean, he looked great against Virginia today. And since May 1st, Abelt has pitched 24.2 innings. He's allowed just 2 runs. That's a 0.71 ERA. And I was watching the postgame presser on this, and Kirk Sarlos said that he is better when he's pitching, you know, consistently, like day after day or with short rest in between. He learned that early on throughout the season, he's kind of a weird arm slot lefty, and it would be tough for him to have to sit out a couple of days and then reappear because he wouldn't have that rhythm or struggle to find that same arm slot. So I thought that was really interesting from the postgame presser. That was one thing that I took away, and I had to go look and see if the stats that he was talking about were true. And I mean, the 24.2 innings, just 2 runs since May 1st, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to find many guys more dominant than that. And that's a solid sample size for a guy who's going to be a reliever here on out, really. And yep. The other thing I want to note too is giving credit to these TCU hitters really making life tough on Conley early. You know, he's somebody who I built my future off of. He was electric for the Hoos this year. But you know what? I took a note here when I was watching it, that Conley early is going to be Kangaroo Court. You know, if nobody knows what Kangaroo Court is, if you ever listen to MLB pitchers from the 80s and 90s, they used to have this court amongst their players. They call it the Kangaroo Court, and pitchers would receive fines for giving up hits with 2 strikes. Early was unable to finish on TCU hitters today, whether they wound up being base hits or even just putting the ball away. It drove up his pitch count. It made him work really hard. It was even surprising that he finished 5, honestly. You know, the way he cruised through the 5th saved the Hoos a lot of extra trouble, but credit to TCU, they figured out a way to make this game tough from the start.
Yeah, and speaking of tough, let's move to that second game because, oh man, was this one tight at the end. You know, it was a tale of two stories, kind of. I mean, Oral Roberts early on had some traffic working on the base pass on Hurston Waldrop, but he settled in throughout the game. And the Waldrop threw six innings. He only gave up one run. He had 12 strikeouts. And those three walks for him came in those first three innings when he just didn't settle in early. But when he did, he was pretty dang good. And that split change was on point today. Anything kind of split it up in the first six innings. We had a 5-1 lead for Florida going into the seventh. Anything that you want to talk about prior to the last three innings here?
Well, I mean, you know, the 5-1 lead all came on long balls, and that's the end of the team. You know, I mean, it's what makes them dangerous. Clearly, strike against Virginia, and they, you know, have the ability to do that to any team they go up against in this field. And that's really what you're going to have to keep in the back of your head when you're handicapping a Florida game going forward. Whether you've been like me, taking unders and sweating them profusely, or holding against them and losing that miserably, but I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And then let's jump into when it got really, really exciting. Florida, their scoring stopped after the fourth inning when Jacob Widener came in, tall lefty, just really funky sidearm slot. You know, he only had four Ks in the four innings, or it seemed like four innings. I think it was the three innings of work that he did, but he just kind of took Florida hitters just off their feet because they were going, they were feeling huge momentum after just hitting. They hit like three bombs in that. It was two bombs in that fourth inning, and I mean, it was kind of like, oh shit, this is where Oral Roberts' Cinderella story kind of just falls apart and they're going to disappear. No, I mean, this pen was one of the better pens coming into Omaha, in my opinion, and they showed it. I mean, there was not a single run after Harley Gollert came out, scored on this pen. So Oral Roberts, that's a testament to them and just their resiliency, because this offense just has not given up at all. This tournament, they were down 8-0, or not 8-0, but they were up 8-0 on Oregon. They gave up that lead. They came back the second day in the final three innings. They overcame a 3-run deficit to then walk that game off at Oregon. And then in game three, they were down going in the late innings again, and they pulled away in the ninth inning to win it like 11-6. This team, it's another thing that I kind of overlooked because the competition that they played wasn't there through the regular season. And then I thought that the Stillwater Regional was very competitive. They came out of there and I was super impressed. And then when they went to Oregon, they had their hands full, and I wasn't really impressed with Oregon's play much of the entire season. So, and their pitching was just not there. A lot of them, they had their top two starters were out with injury, and then two more relievers during that Oral Roberts series was injured. But I mean, you look at this Oral Roberts team and they pounced on the Gators bullpen. You came in and you saw Ryan Slater not get out of the inning. He gave up two runs, and then the whole debacle with the Brandon Neely thing. How, what's his name? BT Ryapel is very active in going out and talking to this pitcher, to his pitcher, throughout Florida's games. And that adds up. And Sully didn't realize that when there was a review earlier on in the inning that BT had again gone out there and talked to the pitcher. And then when O'Sullivan went out there to talk to Neely, he had to pull him because that was their seventh mound visit. You only get six in NCAA baseball. And now you bring in the true freshman, Cade Fisher, who had just given up a couple of runs to Virginia on Friday. And it was nails. I mean, this game was super tight. Doug, walk me through how you were feeling as this one was coming to a close.
Well, I mean, like I said, if someone was holding an under and it's 12, I had got the number here. You know, it was kind of going to plan through the first six innings. Ford is up. They're kind of pulling away. Waldrop's dealing. And then all of a sudden, you said, like you said, Oral Roberts' version of Randy Johnson comes in.
There you go.
The Gators' bats go quiet. and all of a sudden the magic begins for the Eagles. You know, it just if you look at them statistically, they're high in WRC plus, but they're not this power team, and it's not going to play like a power team in Omaha. They're going to create traffic. They're going to, you know, they're going to like dink and dunk their way back in this, it seems like. And that's what they did to this Florida bullpen, and it caused a lot of disruption, clearly to the point where they weren't even able to keep track of the mound visits, and it almost cost them.
Yeah. We have not had one bad game in Omaha so far this year. All six have been great. The one that wasn't a one-run game still had its late-inning dramatics, and it was between LSU and Tennessee. We're going to have two more that I think are going to be great here coming up in a second after I talk to you about Underdog Fantasy, because Best Ball Mania 4 is here, and Underdog Fantasy is giving away $15 million in prizes. And Underdog Pick'em is a great way to get down on some of your favorite MLB and college baseball player props. There's so many ways to win over on Underdog, and active in so many states. Head over to underdogfantasy.com and use promo code SGPN for a 100% deposit bonus up to $100. That's underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. So we've got two games on the slate here for Monday. We're starting with the afternoon game, the loser's bracket game, the elimination one. Tennessee, I'll walk through kind of the pitching matchups here. They're the acting road team, and the opening day press conference with Tony Vitello, he said that Chase Dolander would start game two. Dolander is 7-6 with a 4.50 ERA, 118 strikeouts, 28 walks, and 86 innings. Chase Dolander has a 5.11 ERA in his three postseason starts. The book on Dolander is that he gets better the deeper that he goes into the game. Here's a good nugget. Stanford has scored at least one run in the first two innings of their 8 NCAA tournament games. They've played 9. So in 8 of their 9 games, they've scored at least one run in the first two innings, and that's usually the time they get Dolander. His ERA going into the last start against Southern Miss, he didn't give up a run, but going into it, it was above 4 in the first inning, and then after the first inning, it was sub 2. So when you're looking to get on Dolander, it is in the first two innings. The Vols, they used many bullpen arms, notably Seth Halverson for 31 pitches. He allowed 2 runs in 1.2 innings. Camden Sewell threw 23 pitches and gave up a run on 2 hits in 1 inning. Aaron Combs, Kirby Connell, Hollis Fulming, A.J. Russell, they all shook the cobwebs off, but I think all of them would be eligible. I mean, not eligible, but they would be definitely a go-to arm out of the pen if Vitello needed them. And they haven't even used Chase Burns yet. So that's an untaxed arm in that bullpen. For Stanford, I think a lot of thinking probably went into this decision for David Esker. A lot of people, including myself, thought that Quinn Matthews would be the guy there on Saturday. However, I think he looked at the radar, and it was quite spotty, and there was no rain, but there was a lightning delay, and it was in the seventh inning, and it would have probably burned Matthews for his start. And I think that's something that you have to look at. So they saved him here for this game, too. Obviously, they would have preferred to be in the winner's bracket, but they have him, and their best chance to win a game is when Matthews goes 7 or 8 and the offense scores 5 or more on the year. They score 5 or more because the pen is just a little bit of their weakness. And on the year, Matthews is 10-4 with a 3.60 ERA, 152 strikeouts, 39 walks, and 120 innings. Quinn Matthews has a 2.25 ERA and 3 NCAA tournament appearances. I'm not sure how much of the pen the Trees will use here in this game, but three big arms of theirs all pitched on Saturday. Drew Dowd, 24 pitches. Nick Dugan, 23. Ryan Bruno, 19. All of them probably appear here if needed on Monday. The odds on this game are Tennessee on the money line, minus 145. This is found on DraftKings. Stanford, plus 115. The total set at 10 with the under at minus 120. -1.5 on Tennessee is plus 110. +1.5 on Stanford is minus 140. Doug, how are we splitting the two teams here?
Yeah, well, I mean, like you said, it's going to start with the starting pitching here. You know, it's you can't really pick a better matchup here with Dolander and Matthews. But like we've seen with the market, as we talked about pre-show, the Vols opened up at around minus 160, and they are now trickling down. Like you said, DraftKings has probably the highest line around that I've seen at minus 145. And that means there's been money on Stanford as people are backing Quinn Matthews. And it's clear he's got that dog in him. I mean, his effort in the Supers clearly proves that this guy is going to will his team to win everything he can. But there's a big but here because Tennessee can match it, and they don't have to match him with just Dolander. As you said, they've got plenty of arms. They've got Chase Burns, who can come in and maybe close out the game for three to four innings. He made a whole start against Clemson in regionals, at the pen with that game going so long. This game is going to be a grind offensively for both of these clubs because, like you said, Stanford, their best shot is to strike early. But with Tennessee, they brought in a lot of new talent this year. It took a while for this lineup to get going. And while they have turned into a solid offensive club, we've also seen that trend kind of play out in games as well, especially in the postseason. They don't exactly start hot. You kind of see them start to get better reads as they get through that second, third time through the order. So while Stanford may ride Matthews, that also might be to his detriment because it might be playing into the strength of this Vols lineup.
So where are you going with this game? What's your pick here?
So as we went over, I have my Vols future. And while I do agree with the pricing of the pricing movement towards Stanford, I'm going to take the under here. And right now you can get the under at DraftKings. They're hanging a 10 at minus 120, which if you shop around is same price, but a lot of shops are hanging 9.5, so you can get yourself an extra half a run here. And I think that's the way to go because, like I said, I expect Matthews to give it his all, and Tennessee, he'll contain Tennessee. While Dolander may be shaky in the first, I think he's got the stuff to hang around and give them a solid effort. And even if he only can make it through 5, running up pitch count, worst case scenario, you turn to Burns, who's been just electric out of the pen. You know, you could see this guy is profiling as a dominant closer in the future.
Yeah,
but here, he's not doing it for one inning. He can do it for, like I said, 3 to 4 innings, and that will really keep the scoring low in this.
Yeah, I think you make great points. And I have a future on Tennessee. However, it's chump change, and it's easy for me to hedge out, and that was the whole plan. I have to do it here because I was nervous about Matthews starting in this game. I had a wrong read on this. When it opened, Tennessee was minus 160. Stanford was plus 125. I thought that some money would come in on Tennessee and the price would rise on Stanford. And I was hoping that I would get a nice value with Quinn Matthews on the mound. However, I think that all the news buzz that Matthews received over the last week after throwing 156 pitches may overshadow that, you know, Dolander is still a top 10 pick in this draft. So right now for me, my pick is still going to be Stanford. That's kind of how I wanted to attack this game. However, I've not put money on this game yet. I want that price to grow a little bit, to be honest, before I jump into it, because that pen is still a huge concern of mine. With Quinn Matthews on the mound, that there is the possibility that it doesn't even come into play. I mean, this guy has thrown 110 pitches or more in 14 of his 18 appearances so far this season. So he tries his best to not leave it up to the pen after him. And I think that's one way you have to look at this. Because I think that this Stanford offense, it's a quality offense. A lot of people say that it is an SEC offense. There's plenty of talent here. If they jump on Dolander, like they have in 8 of their 9 NCAA tournament games scoring a run in the first 2 innings, that might be enough for Quinn Matthews, because he's got strikeout stuff. He's a big changeup guy. And Tennessee, they can hit the velo, but they struggle with kind of the mid-tier fastball or off-speed. I think this is the spot where you take Stanford. Like I said, I don't have any money on it yet. I'm going to hope that a lot of public money comes in on Tennessee in general because they're a public team, but also because Dolander's on the mound. He's a top MLB prospect. I'm hoping that's the narrative out there and I can get a better price on Stanford going into this game. Anything that you want to add on the Vols and Trees before we move into the next one?
One additional angle that I think is interesting building off of your nugget with the Stanford getting to Dolander in the first inning, first or second inning, is if you're in a state that has Bet365, they have been offering Nerfy and Yerfies. Okay. And while they don't have pricing out right now,
What have those prices been sitting at? I haven't even been looking.
Most of them have. I only found it the other day. I didn't realize it was there. And
this is awesome stuff.
Some have been juiced over half a run.
Sorry, Doug, your Wi-Fi cut out. Can you repeat what you said there, the last sentence or two?
Yeah. So the for the pricing on these Nerfies and Yerfies and at Bet365, a lot of the pricing has been juiced towards the over.
Okay.
I mean, offensive year in college baseball, but with the magnitude of this pitching matchup, I think we might be able to get a fair price. I opened up the book now. I'm here in New Jersey, and they don't have pricing out right now, unfortunately. But, I mean, even if you can get it at maybe 115, 120, I would say that's a solid bet based on that trend. You know, it's the old saying with these ace pitchers. If you're going to get to them early. While we have the data backing the trees, it could work the other way as well. You know, Matthews is coming off a big outing. He's going to be amped up. Command could be there. Command could not be there. It only takes one mistake from each of these lineups to put a run on the board. So might be an interesting angle.
And adding to your thing about Matthews here, I mean, it's stupid of me to say, but it's also there. I mean, this has been his longest layoff in between starts because they did hold him back. He hasn't pitched in 7 days. Yeah. I mean, that's something. The last time he started was last Sunday. It's a 7-day rest. Normal starting pitchers are used to 6 days rest in college baseball. However, I mean, his previous two starts were on 5 days rest. So, I mean, this guy's just been sitting in the dugout antsy, and he's a energetic guy if you've ever heard some of his interviews. Just kind of like an oddball, total PO, like being one myself in college. I mean, there's plenty of those guys in that pen, and Quinn Matthews is just one of them. He's one of the dudes. Moving on to the second game, the nightcap, the winner's bracket game. The two teams are 1-0 right now, LSU and Wake Forest. From watching all of these post-game pressers with Jay Johnson, he has not confirmed that Ty Floyd will start. However, I feel like 90% confident that Floyd does start this game for the Tigers. He's 7-0 with a 4.50 ERA, 93 strikeouts, 32 walks in 78 innings. Ty Floyd has a 3.98 ERA in 3 postseason starts. In my opinion, I'm not too impressed with Floyd. Floyd had did give up 4 home runs in his last 2 starts here. And specifically, he gave up 3 to Kentucky. If you make those kind of mistakes to this Wake Forest lineup, I think they're going to make you pay. And mix that in with some patient offensive attack at the plate. If Floyd can't find the strike zone, the Deeks will work his count up, and they'll get to this LSU pen that has looked very shaky through the last half of the season. And just last game, Skeens, he looked incredible. 7 innings. Once Tennessee got into that pen, they had all the life you could have asked for from the Vols, and they had traffic on the base paths. Going in, like talking about this pen here, Jay Johnson used his two most reliable relievers in that game, Gavin Guidry. I don't know if he was most reliable, but he was most used in the NCAA tournament coming in. He's a freshman. He was a dual player that, you know, has been shifted to the pen and the back end of the pen. And he had been pitching all right. First pitch, home run. They removed him from the game. They put in Riley Cooper, who then threw 22 pitches, and he came up big, shutting the door here for LSU. Cooper will be the go-to guy on Monday. I can tell you that. 22 pitches won't keep him out of Monday's game, and that'll probably be the first option out of the pen. And then for Wake Forest, Tom Walters said that Josh Hartle would start game 2 for the Deeks in his opening presser. Hartle is 11-2 with a 2.80 ERA, 131 strikeouts, 20 walks in 96.1 innings this season. However, Josh Hartle in his last 4 starts has a 7.80 ERA. It's been the worst stretch of his season where he was otherwise dominant and an ace on any other team in the country. Unlike LSU's bullpen, Wake Forest's bullpen has been locked down and very reliable basically all season long. They have 3 starting pitchers in that pen right now that will come out early and often if needed. You have Sean Sullivan, who threw 25 pitches on Saturday. Seth Keener threw 19, and then Reed Mascolo didn't throw, but he's also there in that back end. And then add in one of the nation's best closers in Camden Menasche. I've heard it both different ways. The ESPN broadcast crew called him Menasche, so I'm going with that for now. He shut the door with a 1-2-3 inning, 2 Ks, came up with the save against Stanford. The lines on this game currently, -165 on Wake Forest, +135 on LSU's money line. Total set at 10.5, -120 on that under, -110 on the over. Wake Forest -1.5 is +110. LSU +1.5 is -140. Doug, are you team SEC or team ACC? I mean, college baseball, it's always kind of this battle between the two conferences. Where are you going here?
I am siding with the ACC here. I jumped on Wake right at open at -150. And right now it's just, so I have a bunch of notes here on Wake, and essentially it's from looking back at that game and Stanford, I had put out a tweet where we get away the game and you're analyzing their approach. Now, with the credit to Joey Dixon, he came out and looked fantastic, mixing in the off speed, mixing in the curveball, really keeping this extremely potent lineup off balance the entire game. But what it also did is it made them hesitant in fastballs. And this is a team that, you know, they can feast on fastballs, and I think they will get back to doing that. Now, the thing is, Floyd, if he starts, which is most likely at this point, is a fastball pitcher. He will ride his mid to flashing upper 90s. It'll probably play up. We've seen guys play up. Look at Sproat touching 101, 102. Yeah. But, you know, it'll probably play up. And I think Wake is going to come out aggressive. They're going to hunt his fastball. And if Floyd has any command issues, I honestly think the hook might be short for him. You could see them turn to Thatcher Hurd, who actually did a great job in regional shutting down an Oregon State lineup. But I was looking back at Floyd's numbers as well. I know you said you were not high. You were not high on him, and you look at his FIP season, 6.2. Now, I mean, in comparison, his you said his ERA has been good of late, but clear sign of regression coming. And also, the one thing I don't like is, like I said, Wake's going to hunt his fastball, and the majority of his outs have come in the air. Now, if Wake is going to hunt hard fastballs and they're going to turn them around, they're going to be in the air. Many may not stay in the park, and that could be treacherous for LSU. While they do have the bats to compete, it's going to be very tough for them to get to Josh Hartle. You know, like we were saying with Matthews, where the rest might hurt him, this might be the case where the travel time and everything between supers here might help Hartle rebound here. I've seen some chatter around LSU's splits against left-handed pitchers.
I have two, and I was going into that if you didn't take it, but go ahead.
Honestly, if you have anything, I was trying to dig on it. I keep seeing people bring it up, and I could not find current statistics.
See our the thread that I was involved in today?
With Matt and or Johnny?
Yeah, and Jeff Davis from Circus Sports.
Oh, yeah, Jeff the Circa. Yeah, I read through some of them, yes.
Yeah, the line maker of Circa, he had jumped in, and I think he deleted some of his replies, but he was talking about the lefty thing too. I have no idea how to find some of the splits, but I did my best work in jumping in here. But I think it's kind of telling that, I mean, one, the college baseball gambling community is really small, and when you get into some of this stuff, you can really find out where everybody's at, what they're thinking. But shout out to Casey Wilson as well. I had hit him up to try to come onto the pod this week as well. The schedules just aren't really aligning right now. He still has the open invite to come on, because this was one hell of a threat, because you had a bunch of gambling Twitter minds for college baseball jumping in here. And Jeff Davis goes, he said at Wake Forest, Wake minus 220 plus 190. Casey Wilson said that this is his original tweet that started the whole thing. Wake Forest minus 150 against LSU. I could never imagine laying minus 150 against LSU. Tennessee has plenty, LSU has plenty of talent. They were number one in the country for the first 11 weeks, and then Wake Forest kind of took over in the last four. Mm-hmm. Davis setting the line at minus 220 compared to a minus 150 line from DraftKings that's now minus 165 with some of the movement here is kind of telling. And then I commented under Davis saying that this is similar to what I think I'd list the game at. I've already jumped on the minus 150 number because I have bet that, and I tweeted that out early. And I honestly think that's where Casey, he kind of didn't quote tweet me, but he went to the timeline and just said, I couldn't imagine betting it. Because me and him, we were talking about Texas Stanford and the CLV versus, is that team really going to win? Because Lucas Gordon was starting and Quinn Matthews wasn't. So the line creeped up all the way to minus 150 for Texas against Stanford. And I was like, I don't know if the CLV is really worth it there. Texas came back. They scored the three runs late in the ninth inning to win it. And in my opinion, bail out Casey. But his early play on Texas with the good number, I mean, I can acknowledge when a number was good, and it was. And he got the right number, and he won along with many other sharp minds in college baseball. And I think that's the same angle that we've got here. And Jeff Davis goes, that's a good bet, in my opinion, the minus 150 number. He goes, LSU's offense is far weaker against lefties than righties. The drop-off from Louder to Hartle is not as big as some may think. There's a huge bullpen advantage for the Deacs. I mean, this is coming from one of the line makers out there in Las Vegas. And I'm like, okay, I don't know how to find these stats. I'm going to do some digging. Here's what I can tell you, Doug. They are 0-3. In their last three games where a left-handed starting pitcher from the SEC started the game, they averaged just 4.3 runs, and they lost all three. So, I mean, I don't know if that's what everybody's basing this off of, because I don't have any concrete numbers that say that these guys aren't as good against left-handed pitching, because the box scores don't look that bad. Tommy Vail absolutely dealt, but they pushed Hagen Smith out. They got him out of the game in 3.2 innings. Then Hunter Holland came in, and he dealt in the back half on that piggyback start. And then Texas A&M, Will Johnston threw all right. He threw five innings. I think he gave up three runs. But those are the three situations within the last 6 weeks that a left-handed starting pitcher started the game that was really, really good in the SEC. And I think that's where the talent is able to – kind of match Hartle. After all of that I just said, Doug, I mean, does that kind of sway you at all? I mean, I don't know how to how to handle it. I've already jumped on the minus 150 just knowing that the bullpens are there. But, you know, does the LSU offense struggle against left-handed pitching?
I mean, like you said, it is extremely small and not very deep sample size.
Yeah.
Seems to suggest. But you know what? Like, one of the games you brought up was against Hagan Smith in the SEC tournament. And while you said Hagan Smith got out of there in 3 2/3 in that piggyback start, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he strike out like 9 batters?
Yes, he did. He had 9 Ks.
Dominated. Like, yeah. There's a point where it ran up his own pitch count.
Yes, because you know? he was on a short count. He was on short rest. It was 75 pitches, and that was the limit. He was pissed off that he came out of the game, that DVH made the move. But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, that was the game. It basically out-dueled Skeens. And, you know, I was sitting there, and I was like, wow. You know, and credit to – I remember my partner here at the Action Network, Kyle, and, you know, big Hog fan. And he after that game, he was like, you know, he's like, I'm Hogs, and Hagan Smith gave him a reply. And, you know, if this lefty trend holds true, Hartle is the guy to dominate this lineup.
I mean,
he's absolutely electric. You know, you really – you can make the argument that when he's on, they're, you know, he's 1B to Louder, you know, racking up 131 Ks. He has the potential to dominate this one if he can find it.
And they're going to come in. They could piggyback here too, because they've got Hartle that's starting, and then Sean Sullivan's a wicked left-hander that dealt with an injury during the middle half of the season. He got moved to the pen just not really because he was bad. It was just because he wasn't stretched out. And that's the case here, where he's been nasty out of the pen, and he's going to be available again. He only threw 25 pitches the other day against Stanford. And, like, this is a short sample size. However, it's kind of telling that if you can hold the second highest scoring offense in college baseball to just 4.3 runs, it's a short sample, 3 games, but 4 runs, 4 runs, and 5 runs in those 3 games. I think we're on the right side, and we both got the minus 150 number.
Mm-hmm.
Any feel on the total here? Because, I mean, this is a Josh Hartle, like, however we're talking about the matchup here, that it kind of favors him.
Mm-hmm.
We can't ignore that the guy has a 780 ERA in his last 4 starts. Ty Floyd hasn't looked, in my opinion, hasn't looked amazing this season. He has the 7-0 record, but I think that he is kind of vulnerable to this Wake Forest lineup that likes to hit the heat. And he had trouble locating that curveball against Kentucky. The changeup, really, he doesn't have a feel on that. He's kind of just a 2-pitch starting pitcher, in my opinion, with the fastball curve. Do you think that the over is going to hit on this one? The under 6-0. It's only 10.5 with 2 very, very good offenses, the number 1 and number 2 scoring offenses in the country.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, I think it's dropped to 9.5. I'm seeing pretty much every market but DraftKings is painted at 9.5.
Wow.
Due to the under as well. So you know what? I after everything we've gone through here, it's a good shot, especially if the trend of LSU scoring 4 to 5 runs holds. Because if Wake can match them, we're going to be right there.
Yeah, you know, Doug,
obviously,
you kind of came in for like every 4th word. I could understand what you were saying, but I don't know how it's going to sound on the audio side. Do you mind running through it one more time?
Yep, I'll go back. So, like I was saying, this total is now really painted at 9.5. It's dropped from 10.5, and that's due to the under. But what we were saying, if this trend against left-handed pitching holds, you're going to have LSU in that 4 to 5 run range, and we're expecting Wake to bounce back offensively. So we're going to be right around that 9-10 total.
Yeah.
It's definitely going to be worth a look. If it somehow drops to 9 and we get some type of juice on the over, I mean, honestly, even if you can get 9.5 at minus 105, I would say that's definitely worth a look. Like you said, like we went over, if Floyd implodes and they have to herd, you know, that there's going to be runs on the board early. So it's the over is going to be in a good spot.
Yeah, I really like the way that we're kind of handicapping this one on the fly, with the trend that, I mean, we don't know how they actually perform batting average wise and any advanced analytics wise against left-handed pitching, but this is all we have to go off of because it's very hard to find some of that advanced stuff in college baseball and statistics wise. You've mentioned it, I think, two or three times now, Thatcher Hurd. Do you really think that they'd go to him out of the pen here? Because, I mean, he would probably be their top option because if they lose on Monday, they play on Tuesday. He'd probably be their guy to start that game.
I feel like he's earned some trust in the bullpen as being their stopper. You know, like that's kind of the term that I've liked to adopt it, at least for college baseball. And in these tournament formats, you need a stopper because in this situation, if Floyd falters, you need somebody to come in and stop the bleeding immediately, especially against Wake, because they could blow the game open. And Hurd, like I said, he looked very good in regionals against Oregon State, which is a very potent lineup, you know. And he's going to earn some trust in that role. And, LSU has a chance to put themselves in a great spot if they can stay competitive with Wake here. You know, I really think they can't afford to push themselves to the brink of elimination because even if Hurd start game three, they're still not going to have another reliable option behind him.
It's either Christian Little or Blake Money there. If Hurd goes in this second game in relief, those are your two starters for that third game, whether it's the winner's bracket against any of the three teams that are still alive here or in the loser's bracket against the winner of Stanford, Tennessee. And do you trust Little or Money here? I don't know. I think Money has kind of been on the good side of Jay Johnson's shoulder right now compared to Little. Money did get rewarded with it was a 15-0 lead against Oregon State that he was able to come in and finish the game off. So, I mean, if that's how you want to view it, Money would probably be the guy that starts game three. To end the show, I like to do this as well because some days we have really good prices that are really bettable and some days we don't. I think today this is a very attackable board if you want to be aggressive. But just one play to go for the listeners. What's your favorite play here for Monday's college baseball?
My favorite play for the slate is Wake at, well, and the -150 is probably unavailable. Like I said, we got that at open.
It's -165 right now on draft.
Yeah, I'm trying to look. So if we're going off line making,
okay,
I'm going to use my friend Colin Wilson's projections here that he puts out. He has Wake priced at -267, which is a little steep.
Yeah, I mean, going off of what Jeff Davis of Circa said, -220 was his number there too.
And you know what? And if you're going to take those two numbers and even average them, you're going to be in that -240 range.
Yeah.
Which is going to create significant value on anything under -200, honestly. I mean, yes, we are putting confidence in Hartle, who's struggled lately. But really, it's going to be the bats that are going to lead this here. And, you know. I'm very much expecting the Deeks to bounce back offensively here.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I like Wake Forest here. The price, wherever you can get it, I like it anything under 200. I think when you're starting to get over 200, that's where my view of, you know, Hartle has struggled lately, and this LSU offense is really, really good. Like, we don't mean to slight this offense in any single way possible. When you get down to the nitty-gritty in the College World Series, you have to try to find something to poke a hole in the number two overall offense in scoring runs per game. So I like Wake Forest a lot. I like that over that we kind of live handicapped as well. When you were saying you were looking at 9.5, so basically across the board except for DraftKings, which I had in front of me. I mean, DraftKings is the one that they're always the quickest to the odds, and that's what I just go there by habit for these shows. But I would say – for me, the three that I'll probably have money on tomorrow is I already have money on Wake Forest. I'm planning on hitting this over pretty much right after the show on a different book. And then Stanford, I'm going to wait till like an hour before. And if that thing's at plus 130 or higher, I think that there's a little bit of value there if the offense is able to jump on Dolander early. And hopefully Matthews just goes deep. If he's not going deep, this thing's over. It's road off. Just go ahead and live bet it against yourself there and try to middle or just hedge yourself out of it. But yeah, that's how I view the day. Doug, anything that you want to add before you hit the road?
Plays-wise, no. I mean, we've went over a lot of my angles. Like I said, keep an eye out on that Yerfie in the Stanford game. Yeah. We have very interesting trend that I'm gonna look at first thing in the morning once I get up. But you know, Monday's could be fantastic. I can't wait for 2 o'clock Eastern. I am jacked up for this day. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, and shout out to the live chat. I haven't really acknowledged them until like the final 5 minutes of the show. I feel bad. But we've had over 20 people in here tonight past midnight discussing college baseball. And, you know, Ryan Hasty in the chat, he goes, is Wake Forest money line or run line -1.5? It's +110 right now currently. Is that a play that
he cut out on me a little bit?
Oh, my bad. So Wake Forest, the run line -1.5, it's currently at +110. Is that something that you would consider? Because I would say if you are unable to get a good price on the money line, I would probably go for the run line too. I would just want some money on the Forest.
Yeah, we haven't seen a lot of run lines in that plus money territory. And, you know, that's pretty much a credit to the pitching matchup, really. Because, like you said, betting the underdog run lines has been extremely profitable yet. Here is where we're going to get a good spot to take a favorite's run line with plus money. And like I said, if our handicap goes as we think it may with Floyd potentially faltering and Hartle bouncing back, the Deeks are going to win this game by multiple runs. So covering that spread is definitely within the realm of possibility and is definitely worth a sprinkle if you're on the Deeks with us.
That's exactly how I look at it. Doug, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on. Just providing another point of view, because, I mean, when you're talking College World Series, we have 8 teams max. Now we only have 7 teams, but we're only discussing the 4 teams on the board today. Mm-hmm. And having another voice is very fun for the listeners of the show that always come back daily. So it's not just me, because basically my views on all the teams overall haven't changed from when we entered the tournament here in Omaha, but always like having a guest on. Thank you very much for coming on. I know it was probably a tough ask coming on at 11:45 at night, but really appreciate it. All the followers loved it. So you can follow Doug on Twitter at Doug. It's Doug Ziefel. And he's writing articles for Action Network over there. Check him out. How often are you pumping them out, Doug?
So over there, I'm pretty much year round. If you want to follow me, I cover college baseball. I cover the MLB. Then we'll transition over to college football, college basketball. And you know, but personally, I am very passionate about the college baseball writing. You know, that's something I spearheaded here at the Action Network, and I'm very proud of it. I appreciate everybody who follows my work and reads it. Any comments, any likes, I will respond to you. I will give you my insight. If you value it, I appreciate it. You know, like I said, this college baseball community, especially on Twitter, has been something that has, you know, grown with me, and it's awesome, you know, and they getting to connect with Noah here and other people in our community. So the more it grows, the better this is going to get. So thank you to everybody who is already here and anybody who comes.
Thanks, Doug, a lot. And just as we head out, you can view all of my picks daily on the sportsgamblingpodcast.com/college baseball picks. It's in the MLB tab, the drop down college baseball picks. They're for free there. You can follow me on Twitter, the word 70, the number 7NB, the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. There's a ton of great work. A bunch of people like me covering their favorite niche sport as well. And also, you got to go over and check out the College Football Experience. Colby's doing an excellent job. He's going all 133 team previews in the preseason here for college football. I couldn't recommend it enough, and I'm over there clipping away at those shows while I'm not doing college baseball stuff. So thank you all for tuning in. You've been experiencing the better side of college baseball with the College Baseball Experience. Adios, amigos.